Your Honors, this is a case where the court has to decide whether or not a seizure occurred and when it occurred. Mr. Mitchell was convicted of one count of possession of controlled substance. The case began when Mr. Mitchell was at a motel in the King County area. He was at his car when Officer Yagi, a police officer, approached his car. In the trial court, both Mr. Mitchell's and Officer Yagi's testimony was substantially different. Officer Yagi testified that he drove past Mr. Mitchell's car, which was parked in a stall in the motel parking lot. Mr. Mitchell testified that he actually parked behind him and blocked his car in.
The finding of fact that you've assigned error to is the finding that there wasn't confrontational words or tone. We do have evidence of the words used, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. We do have evidence of some of the words that were used. The tone, however, there certainly was no evidence of tone. And I think the trial court assumed the tone without any real testimony from Officer Yagi or from Mr. Mitchell that supported that.
Is there indirect evidence of tone? Officer Yagi says it was a very fluid contact, that Mitchell was very smooth himself and responsive. It was calm, very cordial. Mitchell was laid back. Doesn't that suggest, or isn't that consistent with no confrontational conversation?
In some ways it could be, but I think if you look at the facts in the totality based on Officer Yagi's testimony, now it's clear that the trial court rejected Mr. Mitchell's testimony, and we're here not challenging that. Obviously, that is a determination for the trial court. What we are arguing, though, is the totality of these facts looked at objectively clearly show that there's more here. It must be tone. It must be something. But the facts simply don't logically explain what happened from Officer Yagi's perspective. Now, Officer Yagi says he passed Mr. Mitchell's car, which was parked in the parking lot, and parked his car approximately 20 feet past Mr. Mitchell's car. He testified he did not block him in. And he approached Mr. Mitchell and had a conversation with him. And then all of a sudden he leaves Mr. Mitchell after he gets a name that Mr. Mitchell provides. Officer Yagi leaves Mr. Mitchell, doesn't say anything to Mr. Mitchell about whether or not he's going to come back, what he's going to go do. He tells Mr. Mitchell, wait here. Mr. Mitchell says he was blocked in. And Officer Yagi says he doesn't say wait here, he doesn't say anything. He just leaves, goes back to his car, runs a warrant check, which he conceded took at least 60 to 90 seconds. He walks 20 feet, walks there, and walks back, and Mr. Mitchell's just standing by his car doing nothing during this whole time. Now, I think that's also very convincing evidence that something there happened to cause Mr. Mitchell to stay. Officer Yagi couldn't explain what he was doing or why he stayed. And
what's the significance of the cross-examination of Mitchell when the prosecutor asked him, well, you said you felt like you had to cooperate with the officer. What made you think you had to cooperate? And then Mr. Mitchell says, well, the officer had his hand on his hip. My car was blocked in. He told me my car was going to be towed. That's kind of the outline of why he felt he had to cooperate. Nothing in that description, though, suggests tone of voice by the officer was a factor.
I would agree with that, Your Honor. But I do think that the trial court completely rejected Mr. Mitchell's testimony. For us to think that it did otherwise, then I think that there's a seizure there. For the court to find the findings that it found, Mr. Mitchell's testimony has to be completely rejected, I believe. The trial court simply just didn't believe anything that Mr. Mitchell said. Had it done that, I think it would have been required to suppress the evidence. Now, if we look at just Officer Yagi's testimony for language and tone, he also told the trial court that he believed Mr. Mitchell stayed there essentially because he was a smooth talker. And that in itself, I think, is also very telling. If he's a smooth talker, he might have stayed there. But what exactly did he say to get him to stay there?
Isn't smooth talker kind of the opposite of being confrontational?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. And the issue isn't really confrontational. It's whether or not a reasonable person would feel free to leave.
But the finding you're challenging was there were no confrontational words or tone.
That's correct, Your Honor. And yeah, in addition to that, Your Honor, if you look at the totality of the circumstances here, Officer Yagi's testimony, it indicates that more happened here, that a reasonable person under these facts would not feel free to leave. And that is why Mr. Mitchell stayed. Logically, if you look at the facts as a whole, they indicate that a reasonable person would not have felt free to leave. And that's exactly what happened here. And as soon as Officer Yagi gets back, Mr. Mitchell supposedly just admits to possessing drugs on his person. Or actually, he admits that there are drugs in the car, but he strangely doesn't admit initially that there are drugs on his person. That right there is telling to me as well. It doesn't make sense for Mr. Mitchell to admit drugs inside the car and not admit it on his person, and then have the officer find it on his person during the arrest. I think that's very telling as well. There's so many inconsistencies here in Officer Yagi's testimony that I think that the trial court clearly erred in finding that there was no seizure.
Counsel, the phrase is words and tone. Even if we agreed with you on there's no tone, isn't the court's finding that there were no words that compelled him to stay accurate?
I would agree with that, Your Honor. I would agree with that, Your Honor. That
so if there are no words compelling him to stay, the tone of those words being demanding or soft, it doesn't matter, does it?
I think it matters in the totality of everything, Your Honor. And we're not just looking at just that one factual finding error. We're looking at that and that combined with the conclusions of law. I think that even without the factual finding of error, I think that the trial court erred here as a conclusion of law that there was no seizure under the circumstances. So the assignment of error to the fact to the finding of fact that the words and tone didn't constitute a seizure is only part of our argument, Your Honor. And if we look at all of the circumstances here, if we look at them in their totality and not in isolation, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Michelle Larson, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney for King County, representing the State of Washington and the respondent in this matter. This Court should affirm the defendant's conviction for violation of the Uniform Controlled Substances Act, possession of cocaine, because the trial court properly concluded that a social contact occurred. The trial court was the finder of fact in this matter and listened to all of the testimony and made credibility findings based upon the testimony and evidence taken during the 3-6 hearing. The defendant in this case challenges Judge Downing's finding of fact that Officer Yagi did not indicate compulsion through tone or words of, through tone of voice or words. However, under the case law, Judge Downing, as the finder of fact, is allowed to draw reasonable inferences from the testimony and evidence taken in this case. And he heard the testimony of Officer Yagi, he heard the testimony of Mr. Mitchell, and determined that based upon a reasonable inference that there was no tone of voice that was used that was commanding or compelling in any way. And then obviously we have what words were used by Officer Yagi and what Mr. Mitchell testified to as well.
When the Mendenhall factors clearly call out words and tone, why not go the extra step beyond this is fluid, I'm a smooth talker, it's calm, and just say, what was your tone of voice, officer?
Right, and it is unfortunate that that neither party was asked specifically about tone of voice, what was your tone, to either Officer Yagi or Mr. Mitchell. But I think in looking at all of the testimony, that it's very clear that this was a low, low tone of voice, that there was no sort of yelling, there was no commanding tone. I mean, even Mr. Mitchell, although the trial court did not give substantial weight to Mr. Mitchell's testimony, Mr. Mitchell testified that they had a conversation, that they talked. There's just absolutely, the record is completely devoid of any information to even suggest that the tone of voice throughout the entire contact, I mean, even if we look post-arrest, became loud, demanding, commanding, or coercive in any way. And so, again, although it's unfortunate that that specific question wasn't asked, I think very clearly based on the record the trial court had before it, that the trial court could draw that reasonable inference that the tone of voice used was not compelling or commanding to indicate a coercive situation. So I do think that given the deference that should be given to Judge Downing, that he is allowed to draw that reasonable inference that that finding of fact was proper. So then the next point we move into are the Young factors in which Washington cases have drawn a line in terms of what is a social contact and when does that become a seizure. And the Young factors state that although a number of circumstances can create any sort of fact-by-fact situation, that the Young factors specifically state the threatening presence of several officers, display of a weapon by the officers, a physical touching of a citizen by an officer, the tone of voice or words, as we've already talked about. Other cases add in additional factors to consider, such as a request to search or taking control of property that belongs to the citizen, such as an identification card. However, Young states and makes very clear that in the absence of some such evidence, otherwise inoffensive contact between a member of the public and the police cannot, as a matter of law, amount to a seizure of that person. And in effect, this is exactly what we ask police officers to do. Not only do they investigate crimes in response to 911 calls, but we ask them to be present in our communities, to make contact with people regardless, and that's exactly what Officer Yagi was doing here. He testified that this location is a location that this police department has decided to show their presence at and be present, show that they know that police presence is necessary in this location, and that's what he was doing, and he struck up a conversation with the defendant in this case. Additionally, the testimony before the trial court was that only Officer Yagi was there, no other police officers. He did not display his weapon, that he did not come in physical contact with the defendant. And it's worth mentioning that he, in fact, never came into physical contact with Mr. Mitchell. Mr. Mitchell was never placed under arrest. He was, in fact, released from the scene. So he was never placed into formal custodial arrest, put into the police car, put in handcuffs, anything of that nature. Based upon the totality of the evidence and testimony in this case, the court drew a reasonable and then, as we talked about, drew a reasonable inference about the tone of voice and language used. So given the totality of the circumstances, given all the Young factors and even other factors pointed out by other courts, such as taking identification, we just have none of those factors present in this case. It's also worth pointing out that although it is post-arrest or post-Miranda, of Mr. Mitchell in this case, that Mr. Mitchell read through and signed the Farrier warnings in this case. And that the reason I think that's important is that it goes to show how non-coercive this situation is. The Farrier warnings are written so that a person knows that they have a right to refuse what the police are requesting them to do. So again, you know, we don't have a situation where an arrest is made, a search warrant is granted, that type of thing. We have Officer Yagi telling Mr. Mitchell, look, hey, you can refuse this search. Here, read these through. Let me know if you have any questions. In effect, Officer Yagi's testimony from beginning to end shows a non-coercive situation.
Wouldn't signing written warnings, Farrier warnings, though, be equally consistent with it being non-coercive or being extremely coercive?
Well, I think the Farrier warnings in and of themselves are written in effect to tell someone that they have the right to refuse. And so I think when an officer reads or has someone read the Farrier warnings, it makes the situation not as coercive. I mean, the police are telling them, look, you can refuse, and here's your rights to refuse, especially when coupled with the Miranda warnings. I mean, at this point, he's being told, you don't have to talk to me, you don't have to sign these warnings, this is a consent, you don't have to consent. And so I think it just goes with the full picture of what happened on this night to show that Officer Yagi's testimony is credible, that this was a fluid contact, there was no coercion, there was no high voices, there was no demands, there was no request to search until post-Miranda. It may seem odd that Mr. Mitchell in this case did just come out and say, yeah, I've got some drugs in my car. And there are a number of reasons. We can't get into Mr. Mitchell's head. We can't know exactly what he was thinking, what was going on in his brain at that time. But there could be a number of reasons why Mr. Mitchell thought cooperation would garner him some benefit with Officer Yagi. I mean, first we have Mr. Mitchell giving a false name. Maybe he thought his cooperation from that point forward he'd be released from the scene, never having had the officer figure out who he really was. And in effect, until Mr. Mitchell filled out the Farrier warnings, Officer Yagi testified that he believed that this was Mr. Brown, and he was released from the scene. So there could have been a benefit to Mr. Mitchell there through his cooperation. He could have been hoping not to be taken to jail given his cooperation, which, again, he was released from the scene. So, I mean, there are a number of reasons that Mr. Mitchell could have cooperated. We don't know. We can't get inside his brain. But again, the evaluation for this court is what a reasonable person would do under the circumstances, how a reasonable person would feel. And under the case law, a reasonable person would have felt free to leave. There is just no factor here that's present that would show coercion. So unless the court has any further questions for me, I'd ask that the court affirm the trial court's ruling and the conviction in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Two minutes.
Thank you. And just to wrap up, Your Honors, just wanted to make sure we have a timeline clear here. So we have Officer Yagi approaches Mr. Mitchell. They have a brief conversation, ask him for his identification or name and date of birth. Mr. Mitchell gives him a false name, his twin brother's name and date of birth. And that right there is very telling, because a person who thinks he doesn't have to stay is very unlikely to give a false name and then just stay there. And then after he gives him that false name, Officer Yagi goes back to the car, returns after he does a warrant check, and asks Mr. Mitchell if he's still using. And after that, Mr. Mitchell all of a sudden volunteers this information to him. Now, that change of heart is very telling. He's willing to give him a false name and date of birth, but then hangs around. And I think that his tone of voice or something that Officer Yagi had did must have made Mr. Mitchell think he had to stay here. And the Farrier warnings come well after all of this. The Farrier warnings come later. Had the Farrier warnings come right away, then we wouldn't be here. So it came after Mr. Mitchell had apparently admitted to possessing cocaine. And at that point, I'm sure he was just trying to cooperate. Given the totality of these circumstances, I think it's very unlikely. I think it's unreasonable to conclude that Officer Yagi's tone of voice or something else that he did not compel Mr. Mitchell to stay. And I don't think that was unreasonable on Mr. Mitchell's part here. And it was, at the trial court's level, the state's burden to show that this was not an unlawful seizure. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you both. Next up is State versus Hubbard.